AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Our first guest today has written a book about getting to know her great aunt Osma. And through Osma's story of exile, Siberia under Stalin, and also about her grandparents, she got to understand the trauma of her own family history. To tell us more, please welcome to the show Inara Versamnek. Thank you for joining us, Inara.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this all started apparently when you stumbled across an old scarf.
Yes, my grandmother had been a really significant force in my life. I lived with her from when I was 2 until I was 8 years old because my mother and father had incredible difficulties and split up. And she was a refugee from Latvia. She fled after the Second World War. And I knew some of her story. I knew the outlines of it. She often spoke of home and spent a lot of time imagining or reimagining for me what her life would have looked like back in her home. It was a really special place for her. The farm where she grew up was a source of real joy and peace, and so she would try to share that with me through stories. And when she died, I found myself missing her a great deal and missing those stories and missing the connection that I found through her, and had been just also in my own life sort of feeling a bit adrift. And then one day, my father, who was cleaning out my grandmother's things, brought over a box to my home. And mostly it was filled with items that he felt in his heart he probably shouldn't give away, but couldn't really decide what their worth might be. So I thought maybe I could be a good caretaker for whatever was in there. And inside the box was a scarf that I had never seen her wear, but it smelled of her, and it seemed quite old. It seemed that it must have had some kind of real significance for her to hang on to it and to keep it kept away. And then I was going through some old family photographs from Latvia that had come back into my possession that would have been right before my grandmother fled the country. I'd never seen before. And in the photographs, she's wearing the scarf.
Oh, wow.
Now, in all the stories that she had told, yeah, nothing survived the trip across Europe. She spent 9 months after she fled Latvia with my father, who was then 3 weeks old, and his sister, who was a toddler. And they were attempting to make their way into the Allied occupied zones in Germany. Anyway, the story was always that they came with nothing except for essentially what they had on their backs. And so that told me in that photo with the scarf was one of the things that had survived the journey. And somehow here it was back in my hands, pointing my way back home.
That's incredible. She must have been very young, a young woman fleeing on her own with 2 children.
Yes, she was. At that point, she was in her 30s. She had children a little bit later, but yes, she was young. In a sense, her life had just begun, having these 2 babies and imagining a very different future instead of what war brought when bombs began to be dropped on her doorstep. And she was still in the hospital, well, just released from the hospital, I should say, but she had just given birth and was, you know, still nursing my father and very weak, but faced a moment that many people do in times of war where really the only choice was to flee, even if she didn't know what she was heading into. Luckily, she had a good friend from work, another woman who didn't have children of her own, but was willing to go with my grandmother to try to help her. Otherwise, I can't imagine how one would have tried to deal with the chaos of that period in time and still the threat of bombing and the last sort of worst parts of the war without people looking out for each other and taking care of each other and offering help wherever they could.
And we mentioned in the intro about your great aunt Osma. So that would have been your grandmother's sister. Is it true that they were separated then?
Yes. So while my grandmother was in Latvia's capital, in Riga, just having given birth, deciding what to do, her sister, Osma, who's 13 years younger, was in the countryside, about 80 kilometers away, with their parents on the family farm, also deciding what to do. At that point, the railways were cut off, all phone lines were cut off, and bombing was just too heavy in Riga for her to even consider trying to go. So she remained, thinking that it was going to be critical for her parents to have her help. She was just a young girl, a teenager at this point, but she could sense, given what the upheaval that war would bring, that they would need her. So the two sisters at that point, once my grandmother fled at the beginning of October 1944, that was the last time they saw each other, and there was no ability to communicate. My grandmother had no time to sort of leave word what she was doing or where she was going. So essentially from that point on, the two sisters experienced the sort of reverberations of war completely independently and by themselves. So my grandmother attempting to make her way for 9 months across Europe into northern Germany, Osma remaining in Latvia and experiencing what happened once the country fell under Soviet rule. And in her case, one of the fateful decision that she made to stay on the family farm ended up resulting in her being exiled to Siberia, because once collectivization started under the Soviet period, the easiest way they found was to send those who owned a certain amount of land, simply send them to Siberia. That way, quickly, they could put all the farmland into a public collective more easily. So her decision to stay on the farm to help her family ultimately sealed her fate. She was sent to Siberia with her mother and brother. By that point, the father had died, unfortunately, in a farm accident. And mother, brother, Osma were put on a train car and shipped out to Siberia, to an area just outside Tomsk. And there they spent almost 8 years having to survive, really pretty much with nothing. Put off the train cars, again, with what bundles they might have been able to collect quickly when they were picked up. But otherwise, they had to resort on their own to finding food and shelter and, helping to get through each day.
It's so hard to imagine. It really is hard to imagine what they must have gone through. But you wanted to, quite naturally, find out more. So did you go over there and try and find her then?
Yes. So after finding the scarf, after realizing something is sort of telling me I should return to Latvia, I went, and for the first time I had not gone before, and found my grandmother's sister. Wow. Who is still living in the village where they were born, not far from the family farm. And she was in her 80s at that point in time when I first began to visit. And she's a remarkable woman, extraordinary. She is so vital and vibrant. She puts up all her own food. Her husband in his 80s, the first time I met them, he was up clambering around on the roof fixing things. they are people who live completely in the present. And despite having experienced so much for Osma, sacrificing her youth in Siberia to help her family, she bears no resentment. Instead, she lives with such a sense of the moment and of joy and of loving the family that's around her. So I would spend time living with her and getting sort of into the rhythms of her everyday life, helping her in the fields and helping with the food. But at the same time, as we're doing all this, trying to have conversations about the past and trying to access my grandmother through her, since she was really my last connection to those memories. And then also through Osma, learning more about what she had survived that none of us had been able to experience or understand. And that was difficult. She deliberately had, I think, created this life very much in the present tense because she didn't want to return to the trauma of the past. That's how she's gotten past it. So there were times when it was very difficult for her to go into some of those memories, and yet she was also driven by a deep desire to somehow bridge the rift that had been in our family, the fact that these two sisters who loved each other so much had had to experience all these things away from each other, alone in isolation, and that maybe to share it would mean that we could overcome that.
Yeah, oh, that's an amazing story. And has she got family as well? Have you got cousins, and did you get to meet them?
Yes, that was actually also the most wonderful part of the experience. Growing up as a family, a refugee family in the United States, we really only had each other, those who came from Latvia. My father used to say sometimes he felt a little like he had been an alien, maybe just sort of dropped down from space. You're not inside that context of, you know, generations and cousins and things like that. So I just remember the very first family meal upon arriving to Latvia. We were all just crammed in a little room, and it was so many generations, Ausma and her children and their children, and at that time, the first great-grandchild. And suddenly, for the first time in my life, I saw how I was part of something whole, something continuous, something uninterrupted. And that was incredible. So yes, that's one of my favorite parts about still going back to Latvia, is being able to step inside that extended family. And they are all so warm, and they're just wonderful people. And now there are even more great-great-grandchildren.
I'm sure there are. Do you still go back then? Do you go back often?
Yes, I do. I have not gone back this last year because my husband was having some health issues, but so far I have an unbroken streak and have been back regularly, mostly not just because, you know, the research for the book, at a certain point that was done, but just because it is so meaningful to me to be able to spend time with them, to just be with them. Again, those are the things when you choose to immigrate, right? When you choose to live far away from family, sometimes you don't even have a choice. It's just how it has to be. And yet the thing you come to miss the most, I think, are the everyday quiet moments, just the tiny moments of just being together that happen when you live in proximity, right? Just sitting together and reading a book, or just working side by side outside, not even having to talk. I love being able to step back inside those moments.
Yeah.
And also the Latvian countryside is gorgeous.
Is it
beautiful,
really?
Beautiful place.
Is it?
It is. It feels like a storybook. And I don't know, there's nights when you are outside and maybe you've just gone into the sauna and you step back out and your skin is literally steaming and you see all the birch groves illuminated by moonlight. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
And do you think writing the book and finding out, you know, meeting Ausma, do you think it helped fulfill you? Because there must have always been, from your grandmother's stories, a little bit of your past missing that you didn't really know about.
Yes, absolutely. I think what was the most interesting part of all of this was that she had gifted me these stories in part because I had come to her after some trauma and I had come to her in some pain, and she is someone who had experienced pain and trauma and loss, I think really saw in me the opportunity to be able to try to mend some of that. And in many ways, the very beautiful stories that she told me about her past, which by turn was also my past, would be a way to give me back something, to restore something. And so to actually then travel to Latvia and to see the stories in real life that she had gifted me. But then also, in a way, because she had given me that and put me on that mission to discover them, she also helped me find my own stories, to see our family's history and to see the legacy that she had left me in my own way. And that part was very, very powerful for me, especially at the point and time in my life I was in. I think I was really trying to find a way to put my own story somewhat a little bit more at the forefront. I was trying to sort of see myself very clearly, and that whole experience really did allow for that. I really saw myself in a much different way, and also felt complete in the sense of I understood exactly why she had always told me all the stories she told me.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I really do. The book is called Among the Living and the Dead, A Tale of Exile and Homecoming. It's by Inara Verzemnek, who we're speaking to now. And is it out now, Inara? Can we buy it now?
Yes. Yes, you can. It is out. It is published by Pushkin Press.
Wonderful. And there's even a link. There's a link, if it is available now, there's a link on our website on the TRE Bookshop, so you can buy it from there as well. Inara, thanks for sharing just a piece of the story with us. Please, dear listener, go out and buy the book to read the whole story. But thanks for joining us on the show, Inara. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.